राधे
राधे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे।
बोलो लाडली लाल की
जय।
I've been discussing with you the last 3 days the importance of the dissension and life of Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj from a global perspective. What does it mean and what is it going to mean in the future for the souls of this world and what's available to them in terms of what they can get their hands on to help them understand real spiritual philosophy, know about the path to God, and follow that path successfully. It's hard to measure his contribution in that way. It's so dramatic, unprecedented. Yesterday I explained to you how he became Jagadguru. From the initial conference in Chitrakoot, where he gave his first public speech, amazing everyone with his omniscience regarding all the Hindu scriptures, all of them, quoting from dozens of different scriptures. Later, again impressing everyone the following year in 1956 in Kanpur, getting invited to Kashi, and there being honored by those members of the Kashi Vidwat Parishad with the title of Jagadguru Tam. Those scholars were all lifelong scholars, meaning that was all they did, was study. They learned Sanskrit at an early age, and then they specialized, and they learned one particular area of the Sanskrit scriptures, one particular scripture or one particular Jagadguru's bhashya of one particular scripture. They were that specialized. So you can imagine you get 500 or 600 such scholars together, each with their own speciality. That's quite an august group. They have everything covered, all the areas of knowledge, an expert in every field of spiritual knowledge. And each one of those experts felt in his field that he couldn't come close to Sri Maharaj. That if you put all of them together, all of their knowledge on one side and 34-year-old Sri Kripaluji Maharaj on the other side, these are all 60, 70-year-old lifelong scholars, they felt that their combined knowledge was nothing in front of Sri Maharaj's knowledge. So it was an unprecedented event when he received that title of Jagadguru. One time in Mangar, Sri Maharaji gave a speech from his Jagadguru Asana, about a 1 hour speech, a little more than 1 hour, in the style that he speaks when he sits on that Jagadguru Asana. Very scholarly, quoting many scriptures. He has a certain style. Right after he gave the speech, he walked down off the stage and sat on his other asana that he normally sits on when he joins us in the kirtan hall and encourages us to do the kirtan. He came down off that asana, sat on the other asana, and immediately gave another speech, about a half hour speech, in a different style. When he was done, he asked, "So did you like Jagadguruji's speech or Maharaji's speech?" And everybody applauded loudly, indicating they liked Maharaji's speech. Because that speech was delivered in a very personal way for those devotees who were seated there. And the Jagadguru speech was in a more general way for the general public. Maharaji always revealed both sides, but even though he was Jagadguru, he allowed those who were his students not just to be his students. The amazing thing is, we all think of ourselves as his children. How many of you thought of yourselves or think of yourselves as his students? We were his students. We are his students. But we thought of ourselves, no, we're his children. He's my father. Like that kind of a feeling. And that's his greatness. He allowed that to give us more encouragement, to increase our faith on the path and feel more at home on the spiritual path. But he was both. He was the professor and he was the father. To the world, he's the professor, and to us, he's the father. Kashi Vidwat Parishad recognized one other important aspect of Sri Maharaj's personality. Of course, the Jagadguru part is what I've been focusing on, the knowledge, the spiritual knowledge, the way that he was able to clarify everything and remove all the spiritual confusions that were prevailing in this Kaliyuga. That's an amazing thing. But they recognized one other aspect of his personality when in his title there's one phrase, Bhakti Yoga Rasavatar. Yesterday I explained to you that also, even before Sri Maharaj-ji started giving public speeches, he had already revealed that inner ocean of Premanand when he went to the jungles at the age of 16 and for a couple of years thereafter remained ever absorbed in the highest states of divine ecstasy all the time. So even then, in 1957, those scholars of Kashi Vidwat Parishad recognized that in Sri Maharaj-ji. They didn't just recognize the intellectual part and the knowledge part, they also recognized that inside there's something else. There's an ocean of divine love. So they also added that phrase, Bhakti Yoga Rasavatar. It's a very specific meaning, a very deep meaning. I can't go into it here, but it indicates as to who Sri Maharaj-ji is. What class of personality is he? So he was not only the top in terms of intellectual knowledge. Our scriptures say, Shrotriyam Brahmanishtham. Vedas say that a true saint, a true Mahapurush, must not only be Shrotriya, having that knowledge of all the scriptures, but also Brahmanisht, be established truly and permanently in God. His mind must be one with God. Brahm, God, and Nisht, established in, permeated by, soaked through with divine bliss. So they recognized both of those aspects of Maharaj-ji's personality. He's Shrotriya of the highest kind and Brahmanisht of the highest kind as well. So far, I've been focusing on the intellectual contribution that Sri Maharaj-ji made. There's another side to his contribution as well, which is the whole field of Kirtan. Giving us the intellectual understanding is part of it. But then we also need some material with which to do devotion. Yesterday I showed you Prem Ras Siddhant. That's on the intellectual side. You want to understand so that all your confusions are removed? Read Prem Ras Siddhant, which, by the way, Sri Maharaj-ji dictated at the request of some devotees in 1955. They had heard his public speeches by that point, and they requested that it would be nice to have it in a written form so that more people could benefit and we'd have a permanent record of how you're explaining all of this. So Maharaj-ji dictated just like basically in one sitting, you can say, few breaks, just dictated the whole thing like he was giving a speech. And that was it. A devotee wrote, Maharaj dictated with all the spirit, all the scriptural quotations. And then Maharaj himself went back over it and made, if there was any mistakes the person writing had made. But he didn't change anything else. Not the order, not the quotations, nothing. As it came out, that's how it went in the book. No second draft, no third draft, no final draft. The way he said it, that's how it's printed. It's an example of the amazing divine intellectual capacity of Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. So that Premrasa Siddhant is the first place that devotees turn to gain a basic understanding. I say basic because that's where you have to start, but the knowledge in there takes you also to a very high level. In addition to that intellectual knowledge that's required to start on the spiritual path, Maharaji also taught what is the practical path, what do you have to do? And he taught the path of bhakti, which I'm going to explain more in tomorrow's speech. But in order to follow the path of bhakti, briefly, Sri Maharaji always taught that, of course, internally, you have to remember Radha and Krishna. That's the antaranga sadhana. And externally, the best practice, the best bahiranga sadhana to complement that inner meditation is kirtan. He could have left it at that, but he didn't. He thought, those devotees who will want to do kirtan and try to meditate on Radha and Krishna, I could provide some material for them to help them in their devotion. So he started revealing new kirtan. All this, that's what it amounted to. There's more that hasn't been printed as well. Eventually it will be. This is Premras Madira. This is a two-volume set because it has the vyakhya, or the bhavarth, I should say, the explanation of the lines. This is 1,008 devotional songs in the Braj style. It's written in Braj Bhasha in a very particular style, the same style that Surdas Ji wrote in. So it's a very beautiful collection of 1,008 Pad Kirtan. The devotees use this for chanting. They sing these songs, and while they're singing, they meditate on Radha and Krishna. And all the sections in here evoke different feelings. There are different chapters or sections called Madhuri. So some of them evoke a feeling of humbleness, which is the basis for surrender. Some of them evoke feelings of longing, Viraha Madhuri. Some of them tell leelas of souls meeting with Krishna, gopis meeting with Krishna for the first time. Some of them tell leelas of Radha and Krishna playing in Nikunj, dancing, playing in Yamuna, playing Holi, celebrating Diwali. Some of the one section tells about the greatness of Braj Dham, Vrindavan Dham, Barsana Dham. They're all different sections, and they're all of equal value depending on what mood a devotee is in. None is better than another. It depends. What mood are you in? You can find something in here to suit your mood and engage your mind in devotion. If there's only one kind and you're not in that mood, then your mind will say, oh, let's go do something else. But you can say, oh, I'm not in that mood, I'm in this mood. Find something else to sing. And that's only within Premras Madira. The interesting thing about these songs that are revealed by Sri Maharaji and all of these as well, one of the internal differences that sets them apart from what was revealed by other saints, as far as I know, I've never heard it said that another saint intended to create material for devotees to use in meditation. Other saints like Surdas ji, when they sang their songs about Radha and Krishna, the term that's used is Swanta Sukhai. They were in their own divine mood, seeing those divine leelas, and they sang them, and someone noted them down. So they were enjoying the bliss of that leela and sang what they were seeing, and then other devotees noted it down, and it was preserved for people to sing and use for meditation. But Sri Maharaj intended that, okay, what type of leela, what type of kirtan should I reveal that will draw the mind of the souls towards Radha and Krishna? That's a unique quality of Sri Maharaj's kirtan. And of course, the actual bliss of those leelas, the bliss of Radha Krishna name, their virtues, their form, it's imbued in the lines. Sri Maharaj's personality is in these lines. And that actual bliss is in these lines. So when we sing them, it's like, you can say it's almost like cheating. Because for one, we're making our effort of chanting Radha Krishna name and meditating on their form, but there's something extra put in these kirtan to give us an extra boost. So we're getting extra help through Sri Maharaj's grace and what he's imbued in these kirtan. This is Bhakti Shatak. Many of you have probably not seen this version. This is a long time ago. They stopped printing it in this way. This was the first one I bought. It's 100 dohas written by Sri Maharaji. This is kind of straddling the two, meaning it's straddling the intellectual knowledge part and the devotional kirtan material part. Because it's packed with intellectual knowledge, and at the same time, you can sing it. And it's full of ras. When you sing it, you feel a different ras than you feel when you're singing Prem Ras Madira, or any. Each of these has their own specific kind of experience. This Bhakti Shatak, you won't believe. The past Jagat Gurus, when they wrote their explanations on the scriptures, as I mentioned, they explained Prasthana Trayi, Upanishads, Brahma Sutra, and Gita. These are the three main forms of proof, scriptural proof, that they refer to and quote in order to establish their theory. And in doing so, they wrote big, thick Sanskrit bhashyas, which take scholars their whole lifetime to study and learn. Sri Maharaji revealed more of his greatness by establishing his total explanation in 100 Hindi dohas. 100, that's it. The reason this book is so thick is because it also contains Maharaji's explanation of those 100 dohas. But actually it's just a few pages, has the whole 100 dohas. The whole explanation. Plus he added some ras of the Bhagavatam and Radha Krishna Leelas in here as well, for good measure. So this is another type of literature that Maharaji produced. It's got the intellectual value, and also you can sing it. You can pass hours singing this Bhakti Shatak and you don't even feel that any time has gone by. As if that weren't enough, this is Radha Govinda Geet, also an old version. This is Rajji's. 11,111 dohas. Now, those of you who are familiar with the process, or the, you can say, the krum of logic, the sequence of logic that Maharaji follows when he gives an extended series of speeches, the same sequence is followed in Prem Ras Siddhant, and the same sequence is followed in this Radha Govinda Geet, except this is singable. It's all in dohas, rhyming Hindi couplets that end in Govinda Radhe. Every line ends in Govinda Radhe. And he explained again the whole philosophy, and you'll find if you read this, there's even more information in here which is not found in Prem Ras Siddhant and not found even in Bhakti Shatak, but which Maharaji added in here, explanations of mantras and sutras from the Vedant. So many things that he mentions in his speeches that aren't found in writing anywhere else except in this Radha Govinda Geet. Plus, there's more than 300 pages of Radha Krishna Leelas in here. The last 3 days, I've been teaching the younger kids, the age 7 to 13 group. They want me to explain some Radha Krishna Leelas. So I just opened to page 1 of Leela Madhuri in here, where Sri Maharaji starts from day 1 of Krishna's appearance. And I just started reading, meaning I read a doha and explain to them what it means. You wouldn't believe how many of those kids asked me, is this in English? I want a copy of that. I want to be able to read those leelas. As far as I know, it hasn't been the whole thing hasn't been translated yet. That's definitely a project that we have to undertake. But this is another whole treasure. 11,111 dohas, filled with knowledge and leelas and ras. That in itself, Prem Ras Madira Bhakti Shatak Radha Govinda Geet, that in itself would be impressive enough. Then you add Shama Sham Geet, 1,008 dohas. Again, with some philosophy and a lot of Shama Sham's leelas. Very beautiful leelas. And every line ending in Shama. The whole thing rhyming beautifully. This is another thing you can just sing and get lost in the leelas and the ras of all of these dohas. Then you have all these are all Nam Sankirtan that Maharaji revealed, all different lengths, from something you could sing in 5 minutes to something it would take you 3 hours to sing the whole thing. So you have Braj Ras Madhuri Part 1, Braj Ras Madhuri Part 2, Braj Ras Madhuri Part 3. There's hundreds of kirtan in each one of these. Then you have Yugal Madhuri. Then you have Yugal Shatak, 100 kirtan, 50 for Radha, 50 for Krishna. Some leelas, some description of their form and decorations. Yugal Ras, another 100 kirtan. Radha Trayodashi, Shri Krishna Trayodashi. Is there anything else I'm leaving out? Oh, Sevak Sevya Siddhant is another book written in prose style. These are all poetry style. Prem Ras Siddhant and Sevak Sevya Siddhant are written in prose, meaning like paragraphs that you would read. Well, all those, there's so many other kirtan which are Siddhant style kirtan, like Sadhana Karu, Sunahu Sadhak, all these ones. Well, even Sunahu Sadhak, Maharaji one time, he follows a very strict schedule. So this was several years ago. At that time, he was coming to the hall in Mangar right after lunch. At 1 p.m., he would be there in the hall, and every day he was leading some kirtan or giving some talk. And that day, he came 15 minutes late. We were all wondering, what happened? Came in holding a paper. It had 45 lines on it. Maharaji had written it in 45 minutes. Sunahu Sadhak. And he said, he then explained it for the next 5 days, explaining the meaning of these lines. And he said, if you understand what's in here, you don't need to understand anything else. I put the entire philosophy in there. Imagine, when he writes, it's not like if we try to write a poem, even if one of you is talented, it's hard to get a line to rhyme and have the right rhythm, the right length, the right number of syllables, And in Hindi, you have long vowels and short vowels, and everything has to fit and be smooth. There's no historical example that I've seen of someone writing like this and doing it perfectly. You know, I'm not qualified to judge anyone's writing, but you see in Maharaji's lines, there's nothing that's forced or crammed in or made to fit. It just flows perfectly. So imagine writing 45 lines of a poem that fit perfectly with the whole Siddhant described in 45 minutes. He did all of this playfully. Most of this was revealed right in front of our faces. Meaning, we're sitting, Maharaji comes to the hall, and he starts singing a new tune. So we follow the tune, then he takes the microphone and he makes a new line. So we sing that line back to him. Imagine he made us part of it. He could have sat in his room and written all of this. Some of it he did, like that, but the majority of this he did right in front of us. He reveals a line, we sing it back to him. He sings the next line, we keep singing that. While we're singing that, you can see him thinking. Was he really thinking? I don't know. It looked like he was thinking of the next line. And then the next line would come out. So when we sing these lines, I actually remember where I was, what ashram we were sitting in, what time of day it was. You know, oh, I remember when Maharaji revealed that line. I remember when he made that line. So we have all of those memories just because of his greatness. And all of this is a treasure. You have the intellectual treasure to help you understand everything properly, and then you have this treasure that you have to use practically for following the path of bhakti. So, who in the history has given so much, such a total complete package? There's no one. It's an amazing, amazing thing. Along with all of this, Maharaji had one other very important thing that he had to clarify for the people of the world, and that is the role of guru. It's a big confusion about this also. People wonder, do I have to get a mantra? Does getting a guru mean I have to get a mantra? Or if I got a mantra from someone, does that mean they're my guru and I can't change now? If I'm getting some mantra, does it matter what sampradaya it's from? Sampradaya meaning lineage of saints. Do I have to follow a certain sampradaya? How do I recognize a saint? What is that saint supposed to give me? How do I find a saint? All of these questions and no answers. Although they're in the scriptures, but who can go and find all of that on their own? It's scattered throughout all the different Sanskrit scriptures and writings of our historical saints. And just like so many of the other apparent contradictions and confusions which I touched on in the first couple of days, which were so easily, effortlessly clarified by Sri Maharaji, this was also effortlessly cleared up with a couple of logical points. He always does that. He gives you a couple solid logical points that you can just hang on to and look at the world through that prism, and everything makes sense. You can categorize everything. So regarding guru, he said that the first thing a guru has to do for a student, a disciple, whatever, however you want to think of yourself, someone who wants to follow a spiritual guide, what does that guru have to do? He has to explain the intellectual part. What do you need to know? Who are you? Where did you come from? What is the goal of your life? How can you attain that goal? What will be your experience once you get there? All of that has to be explained. That's called tattva-gyan. That comes first. Along with that, marga-darshan, showing the path What do you have to do practically? Why does all of this come first? You see, people talk about mantra diksha, getting a mantra from a guru. Sri Maharaji was totally opposed to this. He says true mantra diksha was introduced by true saints in the past as a means of gracing a certain devotee who had completed his heart purification with God realization. When that devotee's heart was completely pure, then the guru would give a mantra as the means of giving God realization. In other words, there was power in that mantra, and that mantra became the means of transferring the divine power from the saint to the disciple, who then became God realized. That's originally what it was. Nowadays, what has it become? Sab ajao, ajao, like a mass mantra diksha. Just say it on the microphone and 10,000 people can listen all at once and all become your disciples. But what did you actually get when you got that mantra? There's supposed to be power in it, right? It's diksha. Diksha means to give power, transfer of power. Okay, I heard the mantra. Am I any different? No, I feel the same. Am I God realized? No, nothing happened. So a logical person would then ask, Guruji, you gave me that mantra, you gave me diksha, I didn't feel anything. That's because you're not qualified. Your heart is impure. You couldn't feel, you couldn't receive the power. But you're a divine saint. You should be able to see my heart and know who's qualified, who's not qualified. Why are you giving such a powerful mantra to an unqualified person? So it doesn't make sense. Nobody asks these questions, but these are the questions Sri Kripaluji Maharaj says we have to ask. So what's the sense of such mantra diksha? People get a mantra and they think they have some kind of guarantee. I got this mantra now. I got my Guru Diksha, Mantra Diksha. So now when I die, I have guaranteed entrance to Golok Dham, Vaikunth Dham, just because of getting a mantra. Wow, that's a great shortcut. So easy. Why doesn't everybody do it? So Sri Maharaji debunked all of these kinds of things. He says, no, this is a totally distorted version of mantra diksha. Before you get to that point, you have to learn the philosophy. You have to follow the path. By following the path, you purify your heart. When your heart is fully purified, then a true saint, he can give you God realization through mantra diksha. He can give you God realization. Some saints would do it by giving a hug. Some saints would give it by looking into the eyes, no mantra. So it depends on the style of that saint. The saint could be on the other side of the world when that devotee is, when his heart is pure, he gets God realized whether he's physically with his guru or not. So this is a big trap for people, but it's so simple to understand. If people understand what is a guru for, Grinati jnanam iti guruhu, girati agyanam iti guruhu, gumrauti iti guruhu. Ved defines the word guru. Gu is maya. Ru means nikalne wala. The one who has the power to remove the effect of maya on any particular soul who comes to him, surrenders to him. So the grinati jnanam iti guru, the guru gives knowledge. Girati agyanam iti guru, the guru removes ignorance, removes the darkness of ignorance. And gumrauti iti guru, when the disciple has fully purified his heart, then he destroys the bondage of maya on that soul. So, it's a very simple relationship, like a teacher-student relationship. We don't know who are we, what are we supposed to be doing. We don't have any of these spiritual answers. The guru does. He has to give us those answers. Okay, we have the knowledge. Then he has to tell us to get from where you are to where you want to be, to attain ultimate happiness. To attain God, you have to follow a path. Here's how you follow that path. So simple and straightforward, yet how many so-called gurus in the world are doing that? Someone is handing out mantras like candy to all the kids. Oh, come kids, here, have some candy. The kids love you when you give them candy, right? Here, have a mantra. Have a mantra. It's a shortcut to the divine world. So you have gurus doing that. You have some gurus just showing siddhis, real or not. Sri Maharaji debunked that as well. He said, what's the use of siddhis? A Mahapurush, Sarva Deva Mayo Guru, Bhagavatam. Shri Krishna says, the saint has the same power I have. So what can't a saint do? What's the use of showing that power in the world though? If somebody sees some kind of chamatkar, some kind of miracle performed by a saint, what kind of person is that going to attract? The saint isn't looking for that kind of person. The saint wants serious aspirants who are going to follow the path to God. Not quantity, quality. If a Mahapurush wanted to, they could show all kinds of such miracles and probably have millions of followers, but it would just be a huge distraction for the actual qualified aspirants who want the real thing. So a true saint doesn't just make an exhibition of such siddhis. He may have them, he may even use them, because of a certain circumstance that arises rarely from time to time, but it's not a pre-planned public exhibition. Anyway, the siddhis that people are impressed by nowadays, how do you know they're siddhis? Go to Las Vegas, watch a magician. Seriously, that magician is doing, at least he's saying, I'm an illusionist. I'm a magician. He's telling you up front that this is all an optical illusion, but you'll pay to see it anyway. It's fun. Someone else is not telling you I'm an illusionist. They're telling you I have spiritual power and they're doing the same trick. And thousands and hundreds of thousands of people are following them. What's the use of that? We don't think before following. But then how could we? We need the knowledge. We need the right knowledge. Although it's so simple, you should think, yes, a guru has to give me knowledge and show me the path, and then I have to follow the path. It's so simple when you think about it. But we can't know it on our own. Someone has to explain it to us. Then once we get the knowledge, then it's very simple to avoid such pitfalls and focus our attention on the real thing. So the guru gives the knowledge, answers our questions, clears our doubts, shows us the path, helps us walk on that path. And while we walk on the path of bhakti, and we practice bhakti every day, the guru also graces us internally without telling anybody, but secretly, quietly is gracing us. That power of grace, Bhagwan's Kripa Shakti, is also in the Guru. So the Guru graces us internally with this Kripa Shakti. That speeds up our process of heart purification, helps to control the bad sanskars, and you can say, increase the magnitude of the good samskaras to whatever extent we're surrendered. So it's a very practical relationship. There's no mystery about it. The guru-disciple relationship is a very practical one. We want Radha Krishna. We want God realization. For that, we need some knowledge, we need to know what the path is, and we need some encouragement when we're following the path. This is what the Guru gives us, and internally graces us so that we progress more quickly. Once our heart is fully purified, then the Guru has some more work he has to do. But that only takes a second. Once a devotee's heart is fully purified, we call that patra. It's become patra. It's become a fit receptacle for the unlimited divine grace. So the moment that happens, then the Guru gives Swarup Shakti, God's personal power, that enters our heart, which we had purified, and it divinizes it. Divinizes your senses, your mind, everything. Then into your divine antahkaran, into your divine patra, then you receive that premanand. Whatever the Guru has, then he gives you. So he doesn't hold anything back. And he's just waiting to give you that. But that premdan, that actual diksha, that can only happen once we've purified our heart. So that's why prem, the topmost divine bliss, divine love, sometimes it is said to be sadhya and sometimes it is said not to be sadhya. Sadhya means you can attain it by doing sadhana. You can attain it by following some process. And it's not sadhya means there's no process you can follow that can result in attaining it. So Sri Maharaji explained both of these are correct. You cannot attain divine love. It's a divine power. God, not God and not any guru can give it to you. It's an unlimited divine power and your heart is not only material but it's impure. It's not a fit vessel to receive that. It can't be given into that vessel. Sri Maharaji would say, phat jayega, bhasma ho jayega. You'll just vaporize, turn to ashes if you were given that power. But it's given for free the moment we become qualified. So what is the sadhana for? To become qualified to receive that divine gift. That's it. We don't attain divine love. We just follow the path of bhakti to purify our heart, to become a fit vessel to receive that divine gift, which is immediately given by the Guru the moment a devotee is qualified. So you see, Guru is involved in this whole process, but it's a very straightforward process, a very logical process. There's no mystery about it. We have to follow the path, and how to whatever extent, with whatever dedication we follow the path, that much benefit we get. So in fact, recognizing a Guru is not that difficult when you understand all of this. Not that someone can go out and find a saint on their own, because you can't recognize a saint by the way they dress. A saint may wear jeans and a t-shirt. A saint, you see, Sri Maharaji, when he was younger, he cut his hair short, had a little mustache, and wore normal clothes, and would give kirtan sessions and dance Hari Bol and go into divine ecstasy. And go to school and study Ayurveda. So how can you tell? You can't judge a saint's lifestyle and know is he a saint or not. You can't judge his clothes. You can't say is he a sannyasi or a grihasthi. There have been, in our history, there have been hundreds and thousands of both. Sannyasi saints, grihasthi saints, householder saints, and sannyasi renounced saints without families. So, since you have no physical means of recognizing the saint, it's a dangerous thing to just think I'm going to go out and find one. Even their behavior. A saint is not bound by any specific behavior. Brahmavid Shruti Murdhani. Ved says, We, the Richas of the Vedas, are to take a soul up to God, like the Purohit gets you married, husband and wife. After that, what you two do in your own house, it has nothing to do with that Purohit. Same thing, Ved takes the soul to God, then comes back. Brahmavid Shruti Murdhani. Once you know God, Ved says, that saint who has reached God walks on the heads of the Richas of the Vedas. Dharmat anyatra dharmat anyatra dharmat. Keno Upanishad says, God is beyond dharma and adharma, and a saint who reaches God, a soul who reaches God, is also beyond dharma and adharma, beyond the vidhi nishedh of the Vedas. So there's no behavior that a saint is bound by. Swairam charanti, Bhagavatam says. Saint can come and go as he pleases, do whatever he wants. He's not bound by the law of karma like we are. And he's not driven by his worldly desires and attachments like we are. His mind is ever drowned in divine bliss. He has nothing he has to do, nowhere he has to go. Whatever he does would only be for the good of the souls, because he has no other reason to be in this Ganda Sansara. Why would he be here? He could be in the divine world. He's only here for us. So, because of all of these reasons, you can't just go out and easily recognize a saint. But if you understand these few logical points that I've been sharing with you about how the saint helps you, then if you were to meet someone that you're attracted to that you think might be a saint, you actually do have a means of recognizing their divinity, but it takes some time. Initially, there might be some attraction which you couldn't describe, just like an inner attraction. Sri Maharaj always gave the analogy of the saint being like a magnet and souls being like needles of different states of purity. So let's say you have a needle which is like it's made of iron, but it's a mixture. It's like 50% iron, 50% something else. You have another one that's 100% iron. You have another one that's only 25%, 10%. So you have a whole variety of such needles, and you spread them out in a circle and then put that magnet right in the middle of the circle. Each needle is going to react differently, right? The one that's 100% iron is immediately going to go towards that magnet. And the others, however much percentage of milavat they have inside, however much impurity they have, that's how much more slowly they'll turn towards the magnet. And those that have too much impurity, they won't move at all towards the magnet. A saint is like that. And we, the souls, are like all those needles. Depending upon the purity of our heart, we're attracted more or less by the personality of a saint or the mere presence of a saint. It's something we can't describe. We just feel an attraction. We don't know what it is or why. That may happen initially. But that's just the initial attraction. You need some more proof to be sure that it's a true saint. Bhagavatam says, Satam prasangan mama vi.